Hey guys, welcome back. Guess what? It's not even Father's Day, but we're going to be talking about Father of the Year. Some news, top five upcoming releases, coming up right now.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
And
the good thing is the table at least knows this song, right?
You know what the song's about, though, right?
Yeah. I mean, hey, you know what Father of the Year is about? I mean, why don't you tell me that one? You know, so I figure like we're gonna stay on theme, right? Doesn't matter. It has Papa, Father, Daddy. I don't know.
It covers all the daddy issues.
No, you know what? I'm upset now because we could have played Papa, Can You Hear Me from Yentl instead, but
we committed instead.
This is a little more contemporary, I'd say.
Hey guys, welcome back. I'm Rick Hogg, and we are minus one. Oh, I'm so happy that we're minus one. No, wow. I'm just kidding. And I've got Steve Kaufman.
Is this how he talks when I'm not here?
I think this is Hong. I think you're here in Hong.
I don't even dress you, man.
Wow.
And we got Ashley Cheney.
That's me. Hi, friends. Good to see you. Happy Sunday.
And Amy Cassandra Martinez is at San Diego Comic-Con, so you guys can follow her on social media and see all the cool things that she's doing. And I think last I saw, she was getting eaten by a shark.
Well, more importantly, she's stuck in traffic with the rest of
those
folks, because Comic-Con closes around 2.
Yeah.
So it's 7 now, so she might be back in LA County.
Maybe.
Probably not.
Optimistic. I bet she had extra nerd activities going on afterwards.
I've always...
She's queen nerd.
Well, everyone skips that town. Like, what's weird is everyone skips town to get in the line. Yeah. I love to stay there that Sunday night for that reason.
You know what she's doing right now? She's listening to Netflix picks in that car ride, seeing what we watch.
Yeah, Amy.
Hey, Amy.
Yeah, no,
Amy,
she's not
what's
doing
up?
That.
Hey. So, say hi cool. to your mother.
Just be cool.
All right, guys, we are talking Netflix original film and television this week. Ashley Cheney, you were watching The Dark Tourist?
Yes, that's right. Oof. I did watch The Dark Tourist.
I'm amazed because it says Dark Tourist, and I was like, how is Ashley Cheney watching this?
I totally agree with you 100%, and here's why I can recommend it. It's certainly not. It's less on the dark side. The very reason that I could say recommend it to people, because it's not my, like, you know, everybody knows how horror is not my genre, is the same reason that I could recommend it to people who are travel enthusiasts, maybe. It's not scary. There's nothing scary about it at all. It's more like sort of, what's the word for it? People who want to indulge in your curious obscenities, sort of.
Oof.
So he goes to, there's 8 episodes in this series called The Dark Tourist, hosted by David Ferrier, this is my ongoing, like, how do these people get these hosting jobs?
Mm-hmm.
David Ferrier produced a documentary for HBO in 2016 called Tickled, which tracked another sort of really strange...
Oh, I remember this.
Do you remember this?
I remember at a screening, the guy that was the subject of the documentary turned up, and then there was a separate documentary about the FBI tracking that guy and then them blocking him from a screening at a film festival.
Okay,
like,
so
it was a lot, yeah.
To give our audience context, the documentary that Steve is talking about, with whom the guy showed up, was about competitive tickling. And that's a thing, competitive tickling. So David Ferrier has sort of honed his on-camera everything around, like, these sort of really niche, and that's putting it lightly, areas of interest, including places around the world that are attractions for really sort of morbid reasons. So there's 8.
Okay.
Yeah, so, like, there's 8 episodes, and Latin America sort of focuses on Medellin and Colombia. So I skipped that one because I'm like, oh, I'm not really interested in that.
So, like, if you're going to Bermuda, like, maybe, like, the Bermuda Triangle.
So it's all kind of dark stuff. Like, they focus a lot on places that have been bombed by nuclear bomb
sites. Like Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm. Chernobyl. So that's actually the first episode that I watched, because it was the one that I was the most morbidly curious about, which I think is where a lot of their audience lies. So it's called The Stands, like Kirkmenistan, Turkbekistan. Oh, shoot, mm-hmm. I'm messing up all the stands.
Uzbekistan.
How about
Kazakhstan?
Kazakhstan?
Nice!
Yes.
Very nice.
Kazakhstan is in there.
I got a reference on the AfterBuzz show. Very nice.
But okay, so here's my full breakdown of it. Okay, it's very, if you're curious and you want to see it, then this is kind of like this goofy white guy. We can follow along with him and relate, and it's fine, and we go to all these places. But it also kind of, and some other episodes, they visit America to, like, go to the Jeffrey Dahmer campsites and, like, all these Jeffrey Dahmer enthusiasts.
So basically, this guy likes to go to where bad things happen.
Totally. That's the whole premise
of
the show.
This guy would be going to, like, Auschwitz.
Yes, in fact.
Give me a
does he go to Auschwitz?
He does visit some Nazi campsites. Mm. He visits Europe. He breaks into Cyprus. There's, like, a lot of ghost towns. It joins Glastonbury, Europe's most visited place for war reenactment. Mm-hmm. So basically it's all like really doom and gloom places. But anyway, it borders the line of like interesting and also kind of like, for example, all the Stans episode, he visited places that have been like just catastrophically damaged by nuclear war.
Do you leave happy after watching an episode?
No, you don't leave happy. And then there was even parts of it where I was like, this is wrong. Like, I feel this feels wrong to watch. And it's like, it's almost like making light of something. And I read some other reviews online. I'm like, what do other people think about mm-hmm. this? Am I taking this too, like, am I being too precious about this? And other people were like, dude, is there nobody on Netflix, like, Board of Legal Affairs to be like, it's never going to be okay to talk about serial killers like it's nothing, like because the Dahmer episode.
But does he have his own moral compass?
He does.
As a neutral observer of this is what people do.
He does. But for example, in the Stans episode, they're swimming in a lake that they're like, okay, you can swim on the top, but don't go down to the bottom because like that's where there's a lot of nuclear radiation mm-hmm. down there. So just stay on the top. And they're like,
okay. I wouldn't even want to get into that. Yeah, right.
But it's also, they're kind of like poking fun at something that's really serious, because then later in the episode, and they're like, we'll just stay on top of the water. And okay, fine. Maybe that's okay. But then they later visit an orphanage where these children are abandoned because they are suffering the effects of nuclear fallout, and they are mm-hmm. you know, handicapped. And so it's like, it's very real. Like the very things that you're like morbidly curious about from from a 1,000-mile distance, those are things that really affect people's lives.
30-minute, 45-minute, 1 hour.
They're close, about 45 minutes.
45 minutes.
Like 42 minutes.
It sounds like there's a lot going on that you couldn't tell that quite in 30 minutes. I mean, especially when it comes to like that subject, like a dark subject, like a fun, happy, like you could probably do in 30.
It's not a fun, happy. Yeah. I don't think it's like you walk away from this fun and happy. He has a background in journalism, so he's trying to tell the stories of what happened there, but he's also like trying to feed people's, you know, curiosity. But I think it's really hard to walk that line. He's not a disrespectful guy, but it was some parts of the show were like, hey, you're kind of an asshole for doing this. Like, you're kind of an asshole to. And that's
so that
episode.
Means no, it's a not recommend by Ashley Chaney.
Pique your interest, and I'm sure there. But my thing is, from everything you've mentioned, I'm sure there's an equally as in depth and more soulful and thoughtful Vice documentary about it.
It really should be a documentary. That's what I'm saying. It sounded like
you're explaining Vice to me right now on some end. Or maybe it's that. Maybe it's Netflix's version of Vice. Okay.
Yeah.
Steve Gottman, you did. So there's a show, television show that's on Netflix. Explained. Yes. And so you watched episodes 9 and 10.
I did watch episodes 9 and 10. This is a must watch for me every Wednesday. I love the infotainment value that explains.
Do you know if it drops at 9 p.m. on Tuesday or midnight?
It's Pacific.
Midnight on Wednesday.
It's midnight Pacific. On Tuesday. So
right. Or Wednesday.
I've had that. Okay. I've been around at that time where I'm like, oh, let's watch. It's explained. Last week, they did an entire episode on the exclamation point.
No.
Yes.
That's fascinating.
Isn't it, though? Like, I'm just a grammar nerd, a word nerd, and etymology of words. And language nerd, like I'm a language nerd, and this just fed all of that. It explained.
So if you use like two or three or four, does it enunciate things?
It enunciates it more, but it also talks about sexism in a workplace, sexism via email. It gets a lot into how a woman is perceived as bossy or the B word if she pretty much acts like an authoritative man would in the exact same scenario. And how
with an exclamation point?
Yeah.
But yeah, and if men use an exclamation point, they come off not
feminine,
authoritative.
Right?
Yeah, they come off feminine, and how the exclamation point isn't feminine. And then there's many symbols like the exclamation point, like the interrobang The interrobang, it never caught on. Like, it's essentially an exclamation point and a question mark.
In business, I don't even think an exclamation point should
ever appropriate.
Yeah. Unless it's enthusiasm. If it's like, yes.
Well,
like, enthusiasm, yes. Negatory, no, because there's too many ways to misconstrue.
100%.
And it's kind of like,
why? So excited for the screening! Exclamation point.
Yes.
Like I use it, but I do. I actually can totally relate to. I feel like it takes away some of my power when I write an email with exclamation points.
Because it's playing into like.
I will never use more than one exclamation point in an email.
I was always taught. I took a long class called business writing in college, and one of the things they said is if you find yourself using more than one exclamation point in a sentence, you should call or have a meeting.
Ah.
So that was. Episode 9.
That was episode 9.
What was episode 10?
Episode 10 was cricket.
The game?
Oh, great. The game.
Cool.
Cricket.
How is that?
Amazing, because it's the first time, and I've looked into it many a time, it's ever actually been explained to me.
Okay.
So now, so do you want to sign up?
Not necessarily, but I do, as someone who likes live sports and, like, clearly kind of base their life around live sports entertainment, cricket in India is the biggest thing in the world.
That's big.
And it's because there's
it's British baseball?
Well, and this is what the documentary explains, there's essentially three types of cricket. The first type of cricket originated by, like, aristocrats in England, and it was based solely over the people that they, like, it. Everywhere England traveled and kind of took over imperialism, that's where cricket came with them. And it wasn't until it caught hold in India as a way to be better than their colonizers that it became its own thing. And now there was a 5-day version, and then they tried a 2-day version, and that's how they found the Cricket World Cup. And England, not surprisingly, kept getting worse and worse in the Cricket World Cup. And now they've come up with T20, which is a more palatable, less than one day, considerably like a baseball game, how we would understand it. And that's the biggest thing in the world in India.
How long was that episode?
That episode was about a half hour.
Half hour? Okay.
Yeah. And is that the structure of every episode? Because it sounds like you now seem to be an expert on cricket and seemingly the exclamation point.
Hey, so I might be actually sold on... I mean, I've seen a couple of you explain it. I do like them. I might actually be sold on the cricket one, just out of curiosity of like it's one of those weird sports where I don't understand cricket. I don't quite understand rugby.
But like, so, if you walk away feeling like you now know about the sport from a 30-minute episode, that's entertaining.
And a sport that I've read many a Wikipedia article, watched many a YouTube clip, and I've yet to ever truly understand it until this episode.
Is Explained hosted or no?
It's voiceover hosted. Then the voiceover changes every week. So Asif... he's on The Daily Show, right?
Oh, so it's like celebrity voiceover.
It's kind of a celebrity voiceover, but it's very well tied into who the celebrity is. So,
Cool.
So they got an Indian comedian from The Daily Show to specifically do the voiceover for the cricket episode.
Something that somebody should explain to me that was the Netflix film released this week was the David Spade starring Father of the Year with Nat Faxon, who...
I love Nat.
Yeah, I do like Nat.
What's amazing is that Nat Faxon and Jim Rash, who you would know from Community, the place of principal...
Or the movie Way Way Back.
But like, these guys won... Like, those two guys won an Oscar.
Yep.
And I understand like Nat Faxon as an actor is different than him as a writer. But him as a writer, I can't believe that he would want to be in this movie. I don't know how these writers got this thing produced. It's Happy Madison and Adam Sandler produced.
You just
produced.
Answered your own question.
There you go.
But Happy Madison has a long deal.
No, they do, but here's the problem with Happy Madison is Adam Sandler is stuck doing his Billy Madison stuff, and I think that if he evolved, produced, like, it's fine to have that type of humor, the crazy type of humor that he does, but I think he needs to evolve that a little bit to, like, now. I think he's still stuck in, like, the 90s with that type of comedy, and that's why it doesn't translate, or that's why it's so bad. This thing, I powered to about 45 minutes. I could have made it, like, an hour and a half, like it is. And I'm amazed that I made 45 minutes, but I was hoping maybe there's something in there that'll get a little bit better.
Redeeming, yeah.
And no, it's what you expected it was gonna be, but I still, you know, I like David Spade. I do like Happy Madison stuff on some end, but this was another one, and I like Nat Faxon too, where I was like, no, you guys can pass on this.
Can I give you a business reason for why Happy Madison has never evolved pretty much from Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison?
Well, because those
Because Sony likes Adam Sandler so much that they backed up a Brinks truck for him, and they placated him for pretty much the better part of 20 years. And it took North Koreans hacking Sony for Sony to get serious as a studio to not have as much money to, like, literally write Adam Sandler these blank checks like they've been writing. And right when you think Adam Sandler would be at that kind of crossroads, like, oh, man, I have to start getting real serious about my art. It's segmented. People might not watch it. Netflix backs up the same Brinks truck. And
keep in mind that Adam Sandler's not in this one. Mm-hmm. And I actually don't know the cost. Like, it looks like it's very, very, very low cost in terms of getting this one produced, so that could be a part of it's a low cost production, so it's just the I wish I could write a script and just
But it's easier now than ever. It's easier now than ever, and they don't have to pay distribution. This doesn't have to go to the theaters, so they save all that money on top of it. So these films are actually pretty cheap to produce.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's how they're getting made. Is that there's not. It's not a huge risk for a studio. Like, paying to get movies theatrically released, that's expensive.
Well, I call this a 626, which is the area code for Pasadena, because you can Pasadena on this. However, Ashley Chaney has something that you guys should subscribe to. Yes. Thank you, Steve in the booth.
Yes, yes, yes. Speaking of subscriptions, you guys all know that our network produces after shows for nearly all of your favorite TV shows, from dramas and reality TV, sci-fi, and more.
What, like MasterChef?
Like MasterChef.
Wait, when is that on?
MasterChef is on Thursday. Well, MasterChef airs on Wednesdays, but our after show is on Thursdays, and it is awesome.
Ashley Chaney, you're on that?
I am, in fact, on that show. Okay. We talk about food. I make some food there for the panel. You can find us on that channel, which I'll tell you about a little bit later in this little blurb, but that happens on a different channel. But to that point, we need your help, my friends. We're asking that you please subscribe to at least one of our YouTube channels. First and foremost, this one where you're seeing and hearing our beautiful faces and voices. This is the AfterBuzz main channel. By subscribing to our channel, YouTube will suggest content that's tailor-made for you and will help AfterBuzz continue to grow. And if you're worried about those notifications, which I know you probably are, don't worry. They're totally optional. You can click them off. The most important thing is that you hit that subscribe button right now. That sounded like hitting it. Good job. And check out for our other AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well, including, as Rick was mentioning, the reality TV after show, where you'll find some fun food competition shows and Dancing with the Stars and all that kind of good stuff. You'll find me there, too. Let us know that you did.
Oh, you guys can unclick subscribe. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Let us know which one of our channels that you're subscribing to in the comments below, and you might just get... No, you definitely will get a comment, a shout-out live on air from us if you let us know where you tuned in. Right here on the Netflix Picks panel. Let us know that you did that here. And for now, thank you for being the very best fans ever and for helping us be the ESPN of TV Talk. We love you so much.
So, non-Netflix releases, I had to wash my mouth out, and it was on kind of the same grid that said, you know, what's trending. And Obvious Child, starring Jenny Slate, who's on SNL.
Yeah.
She's great. She's actually really, really great. That's why I wanted Jake Lacy, who was in Girls. He is currently a series regular on I'm Dying Up Here. Mm. He's in it. Gabby Hoffman, who's been around forever. She's in Transparent right now. She was a kid actor from Uncle Buck.
Her dad's kind of a somebody.
Who?
Gabby Hoffman?
Yeah, who's her dad?
Her dad is not Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah, I was going to say that, yeah.
It's not Dustin Hoffman. He's a big producer.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So... a couple things in mind. This is an independent film, and it reminded me a little bit of The Big Sick on some end of, like, she's a stand-up comedian, she gets broken up with, and then she manages to meet Jake Lacy, gets pregnant.
Yeah, this is the abortion movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the one thing to keep in mind when it comes to independent film or any film in general, if it doesn't hit an hour and 30 minutes, be a little skeptical. Because every time I've come across a movie that's about an hour 20-something, hour 24, doesn't hit a minute 30, it usually means it's not that good. This one, it's an independent film. It definitely showcases her acting. Like, all of them, actually. Yeah. Script-wise, I was like, eh.
Did it feel a little self-indulgent to you? Like, I watched this kind of going like... I like Jenny Slate, too. I was in it for her, too, and I like her comedy. And this, it kind of bugged me. Not the content, not the subject material, but I thought, wow, she's really, like, it felt a little self-indulgent. Like, it was all about, it just felt self-indulgent. I don't know how else to describe it.
Hmm.
No? What did you get?
I wanted something more from the story, because, like, I like her, but... it's just kind of, that's why I was like, that's what I'm saying. It's like, there's a version of this called The Big Sick that's better.
Mm.
It's just, but it doesn't have to do with abortion, but just a kind of stand up and like going through, you know, struggles with like your family and your life and like what you're doing with it. And like, that's the kind of way that it felt. And it felt like the payoff for The Big Sick was a lot better.
Well, so here's the thing, because this movie does talk about abortion. I feel like it just kind of skimmed the surface of like, it didn't really go deep into like, how abortion can affect people, because like she could use her comedy as a way to help her process some of that, and I think we just saw like a tiny portion of
it. And I mean, and the bad thing is that she, granted, she gets really crap faced and she's not really doing stand up, but when she gets up there and she's doing a stand up, it's like, well, you're not really funny. Doing stand up, you're just going on a rant,
exactly,
it's not funny. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think that was the other issue, because like they open with her doing a set, which is funny, or like at least people are like their laugh track or the actors are laughing, but then after that, it's just kind of. It just kind of just stays, so like that's a pass.
Yeah.
But I like her. Like I said, I really like Jake Lacy, and But that's something that I watched that was a non-Netflix release.
Yeah.
For this week. Steve, you watched... Well, I guess, yeah. I mean, you watched Van Helsing.
Oof. Are you spacing out my next two? Because I'm not positive on either of them.
Oh, and guys, sorry. Like, this was Van Helsing, the TV
show.
Van
Helsing 2004.
I didn't realize that Steve Kaufman had watched Van Helsing, the movie starring Hugh Jackman and Kate Beckinsale, 2002. I'm going to let him talk about it, and then I'm going to chime in about that movie.
Oh, boy. All right. So, I remember this film favorably as someone of the HBO generation. I guess you don't actually watch the whole movie when it's on HBO and you're a kid. It's just kind of on while you're around the house, and maybe you put on a video game and you come back and like, ah, cool. This movie is terrible. This is like, it's just so, like, to know that Game of Thrones was coming in the zeitgeist after watching Van Helsing is just amazing. Because literally you have Van Helsing, who is the mortal enemy of Dracula. Spoilers. 1,000-year spoiler. He's like the mortal enemy to Dracula. That movie, those two are enough. You've got Dr. Frankenstein. You've got Frankenstein's monster. You've got a werewolf. You've got Igor.
The elements were there for sure. I remember when this was coming out in the theaters, and I thought all the elements to it were really cool. But here's a kicker. I mean, Hugh Jackman wearing a long-haired extensions. That's the kicker, right? I mean, right then and there, you should sit there and say, no.
I remembered this movie so favorably that I was just so incredibly disappointed. The CGI was so incredibly bad. The acting was incredibly bad. Like, it's to a point that I think had this been pitched to me as a comedy, I probably would have loved it.
What's the other supernatural role that Kate Beckinsale plays?
Underworld.
Yeah. Underworld. Okay. So I think the problem with me and Kate Beckinsale is that I first knew Kate Beckinsale as like a rom-com actress. So it's really hard for me to see her in any kind of sci-fi role and even remotely buy it. So it's hard for me with Kate Beckinsale to like get down.
And on this end, 2002, that was an era of filmmaking where I believe Hugh Jackman was trying to figure out his career in terms of, because he got hot after doing the first X-Men movie.
And that wasn't his intent. Like, if you were, before X-Men, if you were to ask Hugh Jackman what his career trajectory was, he wouldn't have said superhero action star.
Yeah.
He was on Man of La Mancha, like, he was on the, he was performing on, like,
he was like Broadway,
a musical theater performer.
Yeah, like, where he's at now, like, The Greatest Showman, something like that, absolutely, yes. This one is probably one of those ones where, like, I guess maybe I should do it because he's trying to figure out, like, where he's supposed to be in his career, how people are receptive to it. And the same thing for Kate Beckinsale, too, is that I think this is probably one of her first – I don't remember if this is before or after Underworld, but one of her things of where it's
– I think it's after. I don't want to say
right, so maybe like, hey, well, people like you with this werewolf stuff. Let's put you in this and let's see how people respond to this, too, versus – right, she was in rom-coms or she was in a – a movie called Broke Down Palace with Claire Danes about
was
two girls.
Yeah, being in that. Wow.
So that's her. So, but I agree with you. Like, this one is not good already. So then how about Patient 17?
Oh, man, you're going to have me go back to back? All right. So Patient 17 is a documentary that had been on my queue for a while, and I had yet to hear your rule about independent stuff that's less than 90 minutes long. I believe this was an hour and 7 minutes, maybe an hour and 17 minutes.
Oh, see, that's a TV show, right?
The indignation of the narrator, who's also the filmmaker, at the very beginning of the movie should have set me off to the fact that I'm not going to have a good time.
Uh-oh.
Because it was one of those...
What's it about?
It's about a surgeon in Thousand Oaks who... We're following his 17th patient where he takes stuff out of them that he claims are nanotubes from aliens.
What?
That the aliens are implanting the nanotubes in these people on Earth, and that the nanotubes can transmit data back to the aliens, and the aliens have the possibility of controlling us. And like, he goes off on wild speculations of everyone might have these nanotubes.
This guy still has his license? He's still a board certified surgeon?
He had a heart attack while they were filming the documentary. But he was a quack long before, and like, I mean that medically in the sense you can look up the many malpractices since. So the way the documentary starts is you follow Patient 17, who, in all accounts, is just an older gentleman, like a very tall older gentleman who claims he's had many extraterrestrial experiences. Speaking as a documentary filmmaker, you're allowed to do that. What you're not allowed to do is be the narrator up top and say, the truth is out there. I just have to ask you to strip your mind of all your prejudices and come along with me.
I don't like it.
You're the journalist. You're the neutral observer. Be the neutral observer. Let the guy say what he says. Let another guy say what he says. Ask another guy who can say that those guys are wrong. You never did that. What happened is you took a thing, and it was literally this big, like a teeny tiny thing. Nanotube is right out of his leg. You take it to a lab. The lab says it has like 15 elements and a high isotopic ratio and is otherworldly. And this ridiculous non-scientific description of the particle that is in this guy's leg. And then we kind of go with this, and then like we drone on and on about patient 17 and all of his experiences, and just the documentary filmmaker taking no steps to be even a little bit pessimistic about what's happening. Come to find out, the lab tech is patient 15. That's when I shut off the documentary.
Patient
17.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Because, of course, patient 15 wants patient 17 to have the same results.
Sure, sure, sure.
Everything's tainted. I'm done. Apparently,
so it's not worth your time.
Like,
yeah.
I Googled it later. Apparently, after they tried to kind of sort of call that guy out on it, but not really hold his feet to the fire, he disappeared, and so did the sample.
Oh, Jesus.
And it was just like this. Don't watch it, guys. I've done it the best justice you could ever possibly do.
Fair enough. I mean, the subject itself sounds curious, but if it's not well done.
And I think as someone who likes these kind of stories, and like I'm not a tinfoil hattie, believe everything you hear, but I am like, investigate, search for the truth.
Mm.
Don't believe the first story you hear. But I hate when all the movies in that genre are tinfoil hattie, believe the first thing you hear. Oh, just disprove that without any proof. Like, disprove that without any reason to disprove that.
Hmm.
And it's just so frustrating because I want a good UFO documentary, and they don't exist. But maybe it's because there's no UFOs. And I don't want to believe that.
All right, guys. Well, you know that if you aren't watching us live here, you can always go to iTunes and download us. Please give us 5 stars because the other ones don't work.
Nope.
And, you know, I mean, like, you know, then you can listen to, like, on your drive, like Amy Cassandra Martinez, who's probably listening to herself from last week. But, Steve, who's in our chat? Because we'll give you a shout out.
Zias Bilou is in the chat.
Zias, always love that you watch us.
He agrees that Kate is the worst thing now that the underworld stands want to fan cast her in every announced DC or MCU role. Star Drew is in the chat. He's saying a lot. Jay Becker.
Star Drew, thank you.
Jay Becker is saying facts. Drew Baldwin is also saying facts.
What F-A-X-X.
I don't know. I think they mean facts. And this was all
like
before
all
my
facts.
Rant. This was all before my rant, which was really funny. There are a couple other folks in the chat. I believe Clips spelled ZSN an exclamation point says,
hey, Clips,
yo.
Welcome.
Hey, Clips.
Yo,
good
Clips.
To see you.
Join us in the chat. You'll get those shout outs. I'm also diving in. Someone asked what their least favorite David Spade movie was. Joe Dirt 2, without question.
Mm-hmm. All right. And so, Netflix news this week, which is really interesting, is some people are actually
TV news.
Really going for the premium service, paying $13.99 to get the Ultra HD, the four
really?
Screens at one time, more than just the standard of $10.99, that three extra bucks to get that.
I mean, I guess if you spend the thousands of dollars it takes to have a surround sound digital and
sure,
a 4K
nice,
television, you're doing it specifically to get 4K delivery.
$3 more a month is still tolerable. I think we're still at that threshold we talked about early on. Like, what's the threshold of people bowing out? It's not $13.99. You can still get me for more. Mm. I'd still give them more.
Yeah, I mean, plus I'd love to see what the demographic is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, obviously, if it's a family, sure, that's probably like that $3 extra is probably
sure.
worth it.
The 4 screens,
but
yeah.
whereas like us, where we're like, you know, still like not quite like quite with kids and everything,
yeah,
or
yeah.
like, yeah. then we still like the $10.99.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's true.
I agree with that. I think, and you can timestamp this now, I think the future of the business is some giant media conglomerate like Comcast is going to come along, and I'm sure they keep trying. They're going to bulk subscribe. They're going to bulk subscribe to all the networks and try to get them back on the cord, if you will.
Hmm.
Is say, pay the same amount you were kind of sort of paying with us for all these channels you never really use, but you'll also get Hulu, Netflix, and Amazon.
Maybe.
But our stream...
I don't know if Netflix is going to give it up, but
I don't
see.
Think so either. But if the second they do, so the second they have a bad quarter, that's that's going to be the swoop in.
I don't see it anytime soon.
All right, so let's talk about this is also Netflix news, like two showrunners. One, Shonda Rhimes,
yes. mm-hmm.
who got a huge deal with Netflix. Mm-hmm. She has also kind of like laid out her slate to say that a lot of her content is going to be female driven.
Yeah,
which makes Shonda. Sense. Yeah, which really makes sense. That's what she's already doing. So she's going to continue doing that on the platform. I did read that Ryan Murphy, however, is he's going to go away a little bit from the shocking stuff, like the shocking type stories. And what he really wants to do is empower new and fresh writers and directors and
awesome.
In terms of content for Great. Things that he's attaching his name to.
Wonderful. He's always been a really big advocate for supporting just both gay and lesbian alliance and minorities in his mm-hmm. shows and in the roles in his shows. So I think that's really, really, I would expect amazing collaborations coming from Ryan Murphy. He's a dialed in dude.
I always thought Ryan Murphy was best as a spotlight, not as a guy in it. Like, I think he creates an incredible spotlight and then kind of loses focus, if you will. Like, I thought the first 11 episodes of Glee were perfect and everything else was garbage. Like,
it's because he moves on. He
really puts all of him. You can tell when he stops putting all of himself into a project. So
okay.
if you can find a way to harness that, it would be perfect.
And finally, top five releases this week. Orange is the New Black, season 6.
Mm-hmm.
Eliza Schlesinger.
Yes, Eliza.
Elder her Millennial.
I'll be watching that.
Extinction, The Bleeding Edge, and Welcome to the Family. So those are all coming out next week, so get ready to do it.
I'll be on it.
I'm Rick Hong. You guys can find me on all social media at Rick Hong.
I'm Steve Kaufman. You can find me on Twitter almost exclusively at Steve Kaufman. That's KAUFMANN. I do a lot of stuff here at AfterBuzz TV. I tweet about it regularly. I also run 4 different YouTube pages. If you want to know which ones, you got to go ahead and follow me.
Thanks so much for watching this week, you guys. If you want to talk to me about what you're eating or what you're watching on Netflix, find me online at Ashley on Camera, and let's talk about it there.
And Amy Cassandra Martinez will be back next week. I won't be, but we'll be opening to Ashley Chaney in the hot seat. So tune in.
Best show ever.
When I get back, I'll talk about Orange is the New Black season 6. All right.
Have a good one, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.